Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast today is, I'm going to swing at it. November 14th.
It's the
16th.
Oh, well, you know.
Yo,
I had the COVID, so I lost some days.
Thanksgiving is next week. And I know I'm the nigga that's always like, the year is over.
But the year is really over.
Somebody pressed fast forward in August for real. Somebody was like, who's the timekeeper that has double rabbit? Like, no, it's for real been.
2021 had somewhere to be.
Clearly.
It feels like we went to Derek's shit like 2 weeks ago.
For real. Yes.
That shit was like in August. That shit feel like it was like.
And remember when it was announced? What was it announced? Like in June or May? It
felt May, June.
It was gonna be so far away, and then somebody was here, and now it's mid. Like I don't understand. Halloween literally was 3 days ago. How is it mid-November? But also, y'all know. Well, we're gonna come back to you, Jeff, and the COVID. But I've been losing time too because I've been in the middle of this move for two damn. Hi, Ivy. I'm in the middle of move for 2 weeks. And this has been the first move I've ever had where I really felt that whole moving as a top 10 life event stressor or a stressful life event thing.
And you wasn't even moving to a different place.
I didn't even leave the building. I ain't even leave the building. Like, every single thing about this move was 10 times more difficult than I expected it to be. And part of the problem is, I think, because I was moving in the same building, I didn't take the move seriously. Like, I wasn't really packing.
You're like, I just got to go upstairs. I'm good.
Yeah, I just got moved. I just got moved stuff downstairs. It's no big. And just also, like, I had spent time down here looking at the layout, but I was
this nigga was walking dishes down the stairs.
Work.
Target bag.
No, I had my little dolly, and I had my cart, and I had a little hand truck, and I was putting stuff on the little hand trucks, bringing them down. Listen, my dolly game is official right now, but I really because I was like, I'll get movers to handle the furniture, but I really underestimated the stuff. And what I was telling everybody before you got on, Jeff, was like, even though my apartment is bigger overall and I gained some much needed storage, like I have a pantry now and I have a bigger cloak closet, I lost all my bedroom storage. And I had two huge walk-in closets in my bedroom. And I knew I was going to have to figure out a solve for those clothes and shoes, but I underestimated how tightly I had packed those fucking clothes. I mean, it was like, to combine, they were the size of another room, of a small room, like a nursery or some shit.
Yeah, shit so stacked like, on top of each other.
Oh my God. Like, my next door neighbors, we can see into each other's kitchens and one of each other's bedrooms across the way. So the only room in here they can see is the spare room. And right now the spare room literally just looks like storage. It's just packed. I know they're like, what is that woman doing? Because
what's going on in there?
I'll unpack stuff, but then load it back up. And then, so I'm just like in the process of shifting shit around, but it's also been really stressful because I'm mad at myself. Cause I'm like, the whole point was supposed to be for me to not feel like this place was crowded, and I feel like this place is crowded, and I ain't even got in here yet. So I just got to purge and organize and stuff.
Yeah, you got to throw some shit out.
And I got to paint also because, well, yes, I got to throw some shit out. That's why I got to purge.
Throw some shit out.
Also, I got to paint because I haven't put up any shelves, anything, and that's part of it too. So I got to do that as well because I haven't hung up any photos. So I got photos, you know, I got framed stuff all over the place, so I got to get all that done.
Wow. Yeah.
But you on the other side of the rough side of the mountain. Amen.
Yeah. Amen. I had the Rona. Rona took me down. I was definitely sick and shut in. I had Rona since
that boy was rubbing blessed oils on his chest. Yeah, the anointed oils.
The Vicks on your chest. I estimate I got the Rona about 29th or 30th of October. I thought it was a cold, and then it's obviously kept getting progressively worse. And then I was supposed to fly to California because Missy was getting her star on the Walk of Fame. Well, got her star on the Walk of Fame. Congratulations to Missy, because much deserved.
Yes, much deserved.
And so they were going to be doing testing for that. I wasn't feeling right. So I was like, you know what? Let me do a test here, because I'd hate to go to California and test positive and be stuck in L.A., you know, spinning wild paper at a hotel room just to be quarantined. Did not let me back on the plane and all that again. So I did the test, the home test here, and I came up positive. And then that shit was crazy, because I lost my taste and smell, which was nuts. Can't smell nothing.
That's crazy.
Nothing. So you're just eating, like, because you feel your stomach hungry, but like you're eating and you can't taste shit. It's whack.
You were fully vaccinated, right? Because I remember you had...
Yeah, I'm fully vaxxed. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, okay. I'm fully vaxxed, and it still hit me.
Yeah, and the braces is real.
Yeah. This shit really hit me. So, man, a couple of them nights was brutal. One night, I thought, I'm going on the floor.
You know what I'm saying? You was like, I'm coming, Elizabeth. Is on them?
Yo, one night was so crazy. Like, real talk. No, like bro always says, no LOL. One night... Your man, I thought I had a stroke. Dead ass. I got up. I got out the bed. Nigga fell. Because my whole left side was weak. I was like, what the
fuck? Oh, no. So,
yeah, it was crazy. Like, I fell. I was like, I stumbled up.
Y'all can see Scarface. This is not funny, but if y'all
can see. Yeah, I mean, y'all can laugh. I made it through.
In my mind. I'm just thinking standing up and dropping like a brick.
It was 4:30 in the morning. I'm dolo, you know, because obviously I'm quarantining. And then I'm walking and I'm like bumping into shit because I'm staggering, right? I'm bumping into shit like, what is going on? And then I went to the bathroom. I took a shower. So I figured that might try to help you. I literally had to like pull my leg over the tub. I was like, yo, your man got down and had a stroke. I'm fucked up. And then some staggering around the house.
Do you think it might have been?
Go ahead.
Do you think it might have been vertigo or some shit?
No, I don't think so. I've never had vertigo before, but no. I don't know what it was, man.
It could have been because ear, nose, and throat situation. I mean, ear.
Oh,
and,
yeah, you're imbalancing your middle ear.
Nose stuff messed with your balance, so it could have been a form
of it. It could have been. I don't know. Like, but I just like COVID attacks, obviously, the body in all these weird ways. Like I couldn't like really grab shit with my left hand like too tight. I was dropping shit. It was crazy, bro. It was really crazy. It was scary as hell. And the next day I just slept the whole day. Took some ibuprofen and was drinking Pedialyte nonstop to try to get electrolytes up and mad water, and just slept the next day. And then it slowly started, like the maybe a day or so after it was better. And obviously now I'm good to go. But like that night was like, I was like, yo, this is crazy. But but I'm an old black man. I was like, I'm not going to the hospital. I'm not going to the hospital because I ain't gonna come out, you know. I'll ride this motherfucking wave. But that was just scary.
That's terrifying.
It was literally terrifying. I was scared of shit. So I say that all that to say, I mean, you've heard the main time, but COVID is serious. And then, again, I'm back. I can't even imagine what it would have been if I wasn't vaccinated.
Right.
Like, I don't know. Yeah. I might not be here. I might not be here.
And not for nothing. I mean, you know, we joke, but you ain't in a low risk category demo either, nigga. Like, let's
do it.
You're an octogenarian.
Exactly. No, 84. All that shit uncorded to me.
But you are healthy, and I mean, I think that's very important. If you are healthy, yeah.
But still,
keep yourself healthy, but still, yeah.
You know, so wow. what I did was, and I do want to spread this PSA. My cousin, who's a dentist, she had called me like maybe a day or two after that happened, checking on me, and she put me up on the monoclonal antibody shot. So that's the shot that they gave Trump. And that's the shot that they've been giving. They give all the people in Congress and whatnot. That's why they're getting better fast. All the athletes are taking that shot as well. So it was, I looked it up online. I signed up online. They called me back in literally 10 minutes. Right back. Man. Like, yo, like, like mad quick. Like, you're like, oh, you want to do it? Bye-bye. I ask a few questions. And then they send a nurse to your house. So you don't have to go anywhere. It's four shots. No, I thought about you because it's four shots.
Yeah, no way. I was about to say, maybe I'll do that. And you said four shots. In my mind, I was like, yeah.
It's two shots in each arm.
Nope, not doing that.
You know, and then the nurse hangs out at the crib for like an hour to make sure you don't have an allergic reaction or something. So it's thorough. It's legit.
Good. And y'all go ahead and do that. Four shots at one time.
Four shots, two in each arm.
No, I wouldn't make it.
But it works. It speeds up the process of getting the virus out your body. And like that was last Thursday, and literally by Saturday, I was good. As a matter of fact, by Saturday I felt so good. I took another home COVID test and tested negative. So it happened. Wow. It's quick. So like and it's free, it's free. It's no problem. They just come to your crib and they do it. And it's FDA approved and all that. But they did no marketing on it. So a lot of people just don't know about it. I wouldn't have known about it except for my cousin, who's a dentist, and my other cousin, who's her sister, is in sports medicine, and they told me about it. But otherwise, I hadn't even heard of it before. But I'm trying to tell anybody I can about that in case somebody gets COVID. Like that's a great way to kind of speed the process up and not go through the dreck and the bullshit that you go through when you have COVID with the body aches and the blah blah blah. This will take care of all of that pretty quickly. But get vaccinated. Don't fuck around. Wear your masks.
Get your
booster. Yeah, I can't get my booster.
Yeah, I'm about to get my booster.
Yeah, I was going to get my booster before that, my L.A. trip, too. That was part of my plan. I was going to test negative. I'm going to go get my booster soon. I go to L.A., I'm good. And obviously, God had other plans. But God healed me.
Yes, Lord, he did. And we are grateful.
Down on me, laid hands on me. Thank you for all prayers out there. But honestly, thank you for all the prayers. Because people on Twitter and stuff were definitely like saying, like, prayers. I appreciate all that good energy because a couple of days, I wasn't feeling too good. I was feeling mighty low.
Your sheet wasn't your crown and your bed wasn't your cooling board.
Yeah, because you're quarantining, so you're in the house by yourself for days. I was in the house by myself for 12 straight days.
Okay, what's been your conversation? This is no bullshit, because I think about this sometimes, telling myself, what's been your conversation with your son about, like, if you don't hear from me or see me posting X days? Because I know if my mama couldn't reach me and she didn't see me on social media for, like, 2 days, she would start calling around to my friends. What's your contingency plan?
You know what? I don't have one. I mean, I guess I've been a stubborn old black man, so I haven't really thought about it. Like, I'll be all right, that type of thing. But, I called him when I tested positive, so he knew what was going on. But I don't know. I haven't had the whole,
if you need me, I'm laid on the floor here. If seen me or heard from me in this amount of time, look for me, plan.
Yeah, come on, knock on this door, get the super open this door.
I don't have one only because my mom follows me on everything and she be lurking. So I already know if I wasn't posting for like 48 hours and she'd be like, what's poppin'? Then she'd be calling my friends, dispatching motherfuckers to come look for me, and then she'd be on a plane.
Yeah. My neighbor, my Jewish grandmother neighbor, when I saw her, she was like, where you been? I was wondering for you. I was like, I had the COVID. Let's move on. But thank you for all the prayers and everything. And I really needed that shit. Because that was, like I said, 12 days in the crib. I watched everything, nigga.
I saw you got to the end of the internet again.
I got close, right to the edge of the internet. I watched it all.
I got a little shout out, though.
Please.
I went to a birthday party this weekend. I had to get out of upstate New York. I couldn't take it no more. So I went home. And we played the best game ever. And I think y'all will love it. So it's called Ox God. We broke the room into two teams. There was a judge and a DJ. So there's all these cards. And the judge, let's say, will pick a card. And they'll give you a category. And it'll be like 90s female solo artists. Like a jam. Okay. And so each team comes to a consensus on a song. And the judge would judge which song was best and whoever
she liked at the point. Oh, this sounds kind of like Boogie Noki, but with playing the song instead of performing the song.
Yeah, the DJ would play the song. Like, it was all secretive.
That sounds fun as hell.
It was so much fun. That stuff. You got to play with like live people because we were like doing karaoke and like dance routines.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. This sounds like what the way I do my karaoke thing, because that's part of what they judge on, like the quality of song based on the category and shit like that. But it, instead of performing it, choosing the song and letting the song speak for itself. That sounds really fun. Okay.
That's fun. Yeah. I'm going to order them cards. All right.
Yeah. I think they got it at Target. So check it out.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Brittany, by the way.
Happy birthday, Brittany. God bless you. I want to talk about a couple of obscure things I watched on the television. I watched this really interesting documentary about Mexico. So apparently in Mexico, this was based in Mexico City. In Mexico, Coca-Cola is like this, the biggest drink in the country by far. So there's a whole huge section of population in Mexico who all have diabetes. Because all they drink is Coca-Cola. That's it. They don't drink any water because they can't get the water because the water's messed up. The sewage and all the stuff, the plumbing system messed up. So, and a lot of them are poor, so they don't have money to buy bottled water like that. So they substitute Coca-Cola for everything. They drink the 2-liter bottles. They drink them, but they drink them shits like a Snapple. Like they just banging down 2-liter bottles of Coca-Cola. Kids, adults, everybody. So this guy went there, he did a report about all of them have diabetes. They're all in and out of the hospital. They're all obviously massively overweight.
I know all their teeth are falling out.
Yeah, the teeth are falling out. They showed a woman who like uses Coca-Cola in religious ceremonies. She thinks that can cure things. It was crazy, man. And they're basically like addicted to Coca-Cola. So there was a guy who was like in like a kind of a mariachi bandish kind of thing that they play at funerals. They followed him around. He did like 3 funerals in a week because everybody was dying from diabetes. Everybody was getting their foot cut off. It was incredible. And so they Coca-Cola, of course, was like, well, now we're going to send them Coke with less sugar instead of like trying to regulate the shit. They're like, yeah, we'll just send you the less sugar one there, whatever, bro. Like, so it was just really interesting. Like this pocket of these people are just, they flooded this country with Coca-Cola and they've become like, it's almost like drug addicts.
I read an article about Coca-Cola and their practices in third world countries a couple years ago. And it was interesting that whenever they enter a poor country for the first time and try to market to them, they give Coca-Cola away for free.
Like drug dealers.
Yeah. It's drug marketing.
It's drug marketing. Yeah. But I can't remember all the details of the article, but it was an African country and they ended up like suing Coca-Cola or somehow getting them to dig wells for them. Instead, because of the damage that they had caused with their marketing. Like, don't quote me on this. It's been a while, but I remember hearing about that.
It sounds about right. That was a really interesting piece. Also wanted to talk about, just mentioned Thoughts of a Colored Man, which is a play on Broadway. I went to see.
I'm considering going over the holiday.
It was good. It's good. It's kind of like an... I guess almost like a male version of For Colored Girls.
For Colored Girls.
Yeah, it's kind of like that ensemble kind of thing. I met the guy who wrote it. Really good dude. His name is Keenan Scott. Keenan Scott II. He's from Queens. Really good guy. And this is the first play he ever wrote. He was like kind of doing other stuff, just like kind of working. And he had this, and he always said he was into theater and he had inspiration to write a play. So he like went online and Googled how to, you know, write a play and how to structure it. And he just started writing. And he kind of flooded out of him. And, you know, he worked on it. And he's got it on Broadway. It's like officially on Broadway now. It stars a couple people that people might know. It stars Tristan Wilds, who, you know, we know from The Wire and stuff like that. And, was somebody else in there that's pretty known. There's a kid on there that I think is in BMF. And there is somebody else. I'm blanking out. It'll come back to me. But it's a good play. It's, you know, it's for us, by us. You know, it's about Black men and these different kind of versions of Black men. You know, how they kind of, you know, they kind of. I saw Keenan after the show, and he kind of broke it down for me a little bit. Like the it's kind of like breaks down
Like one person is supposed to represent lust. One person is supposed to represent depression. One person is supposed to represent like gluttony and so on and so on. Like he is, that's a, you know, real concept to it. But I recommend everybody go see it. I really enjoyed it. It's very well done. So yeah, so now I'm curious to see what you think about it when you go see it over the holidays. So yeah, so there was that. And now let's get into it a little bit. I want to bring up Insecure real quick, because this is episode about four or five,
I guess. I think we just saw five. Didn't talk about four on the show.
Yeah, we didn't talk about four on the show. Four caused a lot of controversy. I really thought four was really well written, and I loved, four was about Lawrence and Condola and their having a child and the drama and stresses around having a child, especially not being married, which brings more stress because they're not even living in the same city.
As well be different states if you think about the difference between San Francisco and LA.
It literally is different. I tell people that all the time, like San Francisco and LA are as far apart as New York and North Carolina. There's zero in common with them besides them being in the same state. They're two as far apart cities as you can get. And so I thought it was really well written because I like the fact that we had these two, upperly mobile, good-looking black people that both made money in their respective fields. But it was still like hood drama. It was like what they were dealing with, you would expect, like on some hood shit. Like you would see that, like it would be starring like Tyrese and Nia Long in the hood.
I didn't think of that experience to be exclusive to like hood people or even black people. I feel like,
I think a lot of people do.
The projection was wild on social media. I had to tap out. Like, I'm not even discussing this with y'all no more.
Niggas was telling all their business without even realizing it. But I really, and how Lawrence, like, and, I could say in a way I experienced what Lawrence experienced in that. I was in the same area, but me and Julian's mom weren't together after he was maybe like five or so. So, and I was always an involved parent, but it's not the same as being there in the house all day, every day. So like I'm still, and he lived in White Plains with his mom and I lived in the city. So I kind of experienced that Lawrence thing where I'm still kind of moving around, doing my thing. And then, on the weekends when it's come time to get Julian, everything shuts down. But then the weekends I didn't have Julian, I would still be able to kind of bounce around and do my thing. His mother didn't have that same looseness and freedom as I did. So I kind of experienced that.
We all know being the custodial parent is difficult. But I think the show brilliantly showed how being the non-custodial parent is also difficult. And not in just the parenting, but just in relinquishing pretty much the control to the other parent. Like Lawrence really wanted to be part of those milestones and he didn't think it was a big deal to like give the baby the, mushy food or whatever. But she was like, the fuck you mean? Like,
yeah, nigga, it's my baby. It's my baby. That and she said that, and that's a big thing. Like that a lot of women do say and do, like, this is my child. It's not our child. It's my child. And you have to kind of abide by my rules because this is my child. Compounding that, like you said, with Lawrence being literally like, 700 or whatever it is miles away from LA, a plane ride away from LA, it was just very, I thought it was very, very well done. I thought it was a very well done episode. But I will say this though, overall, so far, I think the season has been mid of Insecure.
I just got one thing to say.
Moving kind of slowly.
One thing to say. I don't like Nathan. I don't like Nathan. I don't like his character.
He doesn't seem like a solid dude.
I'm gonna tell you why I don't fucking like Nathan. Because like my nigga, like you are upset with your man because you were under the impression that his wife put you out.
Yeah.
Right.
It was his cousin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And God bless the wife. Right. Like, I'm glad that they wrote that in because as a spouse, sometimes it's your duty to protect your spouse.
You got to eat certain shit.
United front at all times. Absolutely.
That's right. Right. And so God bless. Right. But like, bro, they didn't know. Like, you just are recognizing what your situation is. Yeah. They had no idea.
They just saw you wilding. Yeah.
My nigga, like, how are you holding that against anyone?
Yeah.
Like,
I don't feel like he was mad at them, though. I feel like there was...
He was mad at her. He was mad at the wife. He was mad at the wife.
He was mad.
Put me out of the street with nowhere to go.
I feel like it was some tension
between him and the cousin's wife. But she came out swinging. Like, she was throwing mad jabs. He was like, hey. And she was like, hey, flaky. You know what I mean? Like,
Sure. Again, because she doesn't know. Right?
Right.
So I guess what I'm saying is, can you... If you're working through this process, right, and I'm not a therapist, and I don't claim to be one, but if you're working through this process, it would seem to me that you're coming to the realization that you kind of did some things that people weren't clear that you were not in a great space. They're operating under the guise that you are you're a regular functioning adult, and that you are making this conscious decision. We understand that you are not. They don't know that.
Yep.
So I just and I think it was actually well written, because it would be very easy, right, to simplify the relationship of him
and make her just a shrew and a nasty person.
So I thought it was very interesting, but I don't like the character. Like, I just don't like the character.
And I'm not.
It's not like, oh, he's the fucking worst nigga ever. But it's just kind of like, hey, man,
a little more growing to do.
But also, one thing is, like, you guys are grown-ups. Like, you guys are not 25.
Y'all are 30.
Y'all are like real official, your own name on the lease grown-ups, nigga. Like, y'all are not kind of play grown-ups. So, like, the fact that he seems to be, he was, like, dejected that, like, yeah, like, my nigga, like, you're living a very different life than your cousin, who is a married man with a kid. Like, he's not standing outside for an hour to get into some Jason Derulo party. Like, to me, and this is what I mean by I don't like the character. Like, to me, if spending time with your cousin is a thing, like, would you want to waste an hour? Like, if I haven't seen my cousin in a while, yeah, but I want to waste an hour standing on a fucking street corner trying to get into a party? Like, nigga, we out. Like, let's go and catch up, or let's go do something that's enjoyable. Because clearly, standing here on this fucking corner is not getting us into this party.
Yeah. And know what else they did that was subtle? That was one of the scenes in the show last night that I did enjoy. They also did subtle, which is like, Velma, that was her name. I know Velma got you under pressure. And the cousin was basically like, nah, like, I want to go home, nigga. Like, I'm not browbeating. I want to go home. I enjoy being home with my family. Like, this is not for me anymore. Like, this ain't my vibe. There ain't no, I got to get home because my wife's going to get mad.
He's like, it's a Jason Derulo party. What are we really doing?
I wasn't the one to go anyway.
Nigga, like, I feel like LA is just a different place than I know about. I think the show is doing what the other thing I don't necessarily like is the goofy shit with the Issa character. It's a little tiring.
Because she's older now.
It was wildly.
You're like 33. For you to be this awkward, you're a grown woman. Like,
and we're in season 5, right? It's the same shit season 5, right? Yeah. It's just like the character, I would think, would have grown just a bit. And she's grown in other capacities, right? In these other spaces, right? But the goofy shit is like really, really weird. And I think maybe this lends more to what Nas said, which is that, you know, this just isn't my age. Like, this isn't my demo.
kind of aged right? out.
It's a little, yeah. it's a little difficult for me to maybe grasp it. And I don't, and I say this, like, I don't think it's a poorly written show or any of that sort of shit, but I definitely think that some of the things, I don't know if they're consciously doing it to not make it an easy watch or to make it a little bit uncomfortable, or if that's not the case, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, but I agree with you. I haven't besides the Lawrence to Condole episode, which I really enjoyed, I haven't really necessarily enjoyed the other episodes. They're not whack. I'm not saying I haven't, they're terrible, but I'm just kind of like, again, maybe I am aged out because, like, kind of going to the beach on a Saturday and then going to the spot and having shots, like, that's not something I don't think I would do now. But now I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's not something I definitely would not go to a Jason Derulo party. But that's
I'm
me.
Definitely not hanging out with niggas who eating pizza off the sand. Like, I'm totally, exactly. I don't know none of this.
I'm not hanging out with niggas who's bringing pizza to a beach. Nigga, what are we doing here?
Like, I mean, those were coworkers, though. I'm not gonna, like, say that's Nathan's man and all of that. Like, I'm gonna just leave that to the shop. But
yeah,
I like Nathan.
I don't, it's cool. I mean,
he's
the actor is great, right? The actor is great. I'm not one of those confused weirdo motherfuckers.
Yeah. They gonna see the nigga on the street.
Nathan is real.
Square up.
Yeah, like, nigga, you wildin', nigga. I'm not, nigga. That's not
it. Yeah. No, I just it's been cool, but it's like, I'm like, okay, what are we kind of doing for this season? We're up to episode 5, and besides that Lawrence episode, it hasn't been a lot of fireworks, I should say.
But I tell you what I don't want to see. I don't want to see the shit end with a nice, neat bow. I don't want to see that.
Absolutely not.
I don't think it's going to.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't, right? Like, I would hate for, like, the last episode to be,
Lawrence,
like,
Lawrence needs to get married and shit.
Or like, her and... I don't want to see her and I'm not saying I want to see her miserable, but I don't want to see this end in some storybook fairy tale shit, because right. I don't get that that's the energy of the show.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like regardless how it ends, it's going to go on and on forever on social media. People are going to argue and be mad at it regardless. Absolutely. However y'all want to do it, I'm with it. I'm excited to see Molly have some real growth, though.
Yeah,
like, this is a good episode for her. She's letting niggas chase her. She's not being super thirsty.
Yeah,
that
being corny and shit. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And I just want to mention, before we move on, I just want to mention Curb Your Enthusiasm, because these niggas have been knocking it out the park.
Out the park.
Like, yo.
The young lady who plays Maria Sophia.
Oh my god!
Is stealing the fucking shit. She is magic.
Yo, was she doing a little dance?
She did the lessons with Cheryl.
Nigga, when she was shaking her and threw Ted on the floor.
Word.
Oh my god!
Yo, bruh. Incredible. And then this last episode, like with Larry, with the talking to the Klansmen, and then the whole.
Yeah. Where does the storyline like this even come from? Like,
and it was like really like so five storylines laid on top of each other.
It was Leon
and the watermelon. You know what I'm saying? It was the guy with the horn. It was the rabbi playing golf.
Watermelon.
Yeah, it was incredible.
So good.
Curb Your Enthusiasm has been amazing. Like, if you're not watching it, you need to watch it, because they are, as the kids say, they are in their bag. That's totally the only reboot
that has been worth rebooting. All these other ones have been wildly mid that are coming back. And now Golden Girls is supposed to be coming back.
Is that real?
50 Cent as a
producer. Is that real?
Is that a real piece of news?
I was like, no,
you know what? Golden Girls isn't even the same anymore, because Grace and Frankie is the new Golden Girls, honestly. It wouldn't even hit the same to have. First of all, it wouldn't seem realistic. You would have to age the women up, because the Golden Girls were only supposed to be like in their 60s. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think Sophia was maybe supposed to be 80. So now, you put a group of 60-year-old women together. First of all, nobody's going to believe that all of them are widowers. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it doesn't. Yeah.
It just don't look like us. A lot of changes.
Yeah, all of them. Because they were sassy and young. Like, what they were supposed to be at 60 is normal for 60 now, right?
Mm. Yeah.
But they read older in terms of just like their looks and appearance and stuff like that. Like, you be having a bunch of Angela Bassett and shit up in the crib. Like, it just, it would just be different now, you know?
Nigga, 60
ain't like, shit.
I'm a keep like, bump, nigga. They out here fucking, nigga.
They outside. Yeah,
like horses.
They out here snatching these young tenders and they out and they going on trips and 60. Yep.
They're going to the grown
60.
And sexy. It goes to the grown and sexy night.
I'm not mad.
It is not the 60s of the 80s. This is not house coat and hair roller 60,
exactly.
This is yoga pants and Air Max 60.
Word. And that's the thing. That's why the Golden Girls were so different at the time.
Because it was like they were talking about sex and stuff.
Yeah, but that's also why even with Grace and Frankie, they had to age them up to 70. They're in their 70s, right? They even had to age that up. And they're still hip and whatever. So I just don't think we need it, because I think that the attitude towards aging, even though I still think that people don't seem to understand what age looks like anymore, but I think that what's normal, quote unquote normal at certain ages, has changed so much that in order to make the Golden Girls, that even the idea of a retiree isn't a real thing anymore. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like
moving to Florida and I'm retiring. That shit don't really.
Yeah, what is that? Yeah, and your husband died when you were 52. Like, that doesn't happen anymore. Like, yeah, I just don't. It's not the same thing anymore. Yeah. So, I don't know how
We'll see what they do. I wanted to mention real quick. What did I want to mention real quick? Silk Sonic album. So, the Silk Sonic album came out Thursday night. Bruno Mars and Anderson .Paak. I listened to the album intensely. Mm-hmm. I like it. I don't love it. I mean, those niggas are both amazing.
I haven't listened to it yet. Only
I mean, it's good.
Yeah.
It's good. To me, it's good, not great.
It's pandemic music. I think they just missed the wave a little bit.
You know what? That's legit. They could have missed the window because when we were all sitting down, it might have hit a little harder. Mm-hmm. But now people are starting to move around a little bit. It might not hit quite the same. Again, and I don't want to dog it. Like, first of all, I'm a fan of both of them. Both of them.
And
amazing.
I like the album. I just feel like I would have liked it more this time last year.
You know what? I haven't heard anybody say that, but I think you're right.
I think it was supposed to be summer. Think about it. Leave the Door Open dropped in March. We were looking for that warm weather. We're on our way back outside.
Yeah.
Music.
Yeah. But you know, it would have been a nice little spring.
Yeah, and the album
Bruno was such a perfectionist that he that's why. This is the second album he's done that only has 9 records.
Well, also, he's been sitting on these 9 records. Like, apparently, I heard that Bruno's been mixing this shit for months.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. He goes over and over. Because I saw an interview last night with him and with them and Ebro. And they talked about that. You know, they were kind of joking. But Bruno Anderson was like, yeah, you know, I just do my thing and I just let it go. But Bruno will be like, for 2 months, like playing the same record over and over again. What do you think? And he's like, nigga, like, what do you want me to think? I've heard this record for 2 months straight. Like, I don't
right.
You know, because I think he said, leave the door open or smoking out the window. They started working on like a couple years ago.
Wow.
You know, so Bruno is really like that perfectionist. But again, I don't want to dog that album. I think it's a good album. There are highlights like Smoking Out the Window, Leave the Door Open, Blast Off. There's some great records on the album. But as an overall 9, I didn't love it as much as I wanted to, but again, please,
what you look for in a fourth quarter release is different than what you look for in a summer release.
Could be.
Like Adele is a fourth quarter release. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you want something that's kind of like big and sweet.
But you know what? I mean, and who am I? Who gives a fuck what I think? But I didn't love her single either. But again, who am I?
And it was an Adele single.
It was an Adele single. I'm actually more of on the pop tip. I was more impressed with the Taylor Swift single. I thought the Taylor Swift song was hot. I saw her.
Could not tell you what that sounds like.
It's dope. She performed on Saturday Live Saturday past. It's like a 10-minute song.
It's the one about Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah,
I just hope people talk about the video. But I think Taylor Swift has talent. I just never feel anything in her music, so I just don't care about
this one. You know what I'm gonna say? Yeah, I'm gonna dig into her album more, and I think this one we might feel a little more because this is one of the the second album that she re-recorded to get away from that Scooter Braun stuff.
Right.
So I think she put a little more energy into it because this is like her shit.
You know what Taylor is to me? And there are people who are going to be really mad that I said this, so I'm never going to say it on a timeline because niggas aren't going to actually listen to what I'm saying. Taylor, to me, is like Brandy. And what I mean by that is she has the talent. She has the pain game. She has the vocals. But she's so stuck on the America Sweetheart shtick that it feels like she can't be genuinely vulnerable on the track. Like, the thing about Brandy's song is that even when I love them, I don't believe them. Mm. And there's this... there's this part of her, she even says that she's such a perfectionist in the studio, she can't let raw emotion come through.
Because the vocals got to be perfect.
The vocals got to be perfect, the delivery got to be perfect. But when you do that, you miss the heart, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I never feel the heart with Brandy, and I never feel heart with Taylor. So to me, it's like, this is a cute song, but I could get a song to anybody who can sing, and they can sing it the same fucking way, right? Yeah. With Brandy, maybe not vocally, but I just don't feel her in it. I feel like I don't feel her in the music, and that's my thing with Taylor, and that's my thing even with Taylor's performances. It's just like, I don't believe you. Like, I don't believe you. And that's
say, I say, okay, if you are for it, if you get a chance, watch the SNL performance. She fucking murked it. She murked it. She bought it. So, and there's for music, I want to mention an album. There's a kid named Dijon. He's signed Warner Brothers students. He's dope.
That's actually his legal name. His mama gave him.
It probably is, because I think he's a Southern nigga. Like, it's a little Frank Ocean-y. It's a little Prince-y, I guess, for influences, but he's great. I advise you to listen to that album. I wanted to mention, I don't know if you watched it, LL and Jay-Z getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I know it was a couple weeks ago, but I wouldn't at least mention it. Did you watch, I don't think the show's come on yet, but there were clips online.
Yeah, I don't think it aired, but I mean, I've seen the clips.
Yeah, what do you think?
You know, God bless them. You know, I think that there are, I want to be careful in saying that I'm not saying that I don't think Jay-Z is deserving of that award or that honor, but I just think that there were other people that should have been considered
before him.
Yes. I think it's well deserved for LL. You guys know how I feel about L. You know, he's going to be the GOAT for me. There's no, you know, when you take everything into consideration, there's just not going to be anybody better, in my opinion.
And Jay is also, to your point, Sean, Jay is artist-wise, I think it's hard to, when you look at the years based on how music runs now, it's hard to think of it like this, but Jay's like a full generation and a half musically younger than L. Like,
yeah,
absolutely. So even that, if people would probably say, no, they're only X years apart, but like, nah, Jay's like, L was a fucking old head.
L's first album was 85.
Right.
L was basically signed as a teenager.
Yeah.
He was a fucking kid. Okay. Jay-Z had already lived the life and had begun to sort of transition into music. Right. And even though they're the same age, they are lifetimes apart musically.
Exactly. And actually, they're like a good three generations of hip hop apart if you really just count starting at Reasonable Doubt, because Reasonable Doubt is 96. You know, Bad is 85. It's like we had gone through four different fucking phases by then.
So, I mean, I'm happy for them. I think, to me, that honor does not impress me. And I don't mean that as a shot or any disrespect, meaning I don't hold them in any higher regard because of that honor than I did previous to that honor.
I got you.
You know, Jay, I mean, his work speaks for itself. You know, he's right. Nobody held it down for 10 straight summers, my nigga. Nobody. Nobody.
Accurate.
You know what I'm saying?
Nobody. And I was listening to LL in middle school, high school, and college consistently that whole entire time. There is no other artist I can say that I was doing that with. Not hip-hop.
Yeah.
They're both legendary niggas. You can't front.
Yeah. So to me, I'm really happy for both of them. I don't like saying I'm happy for hip hop because it feels like that's, you know, I just don't think they're ice.
Like, that's the pinnacle. Like, oh,
yeah, I don't think they're ice colder. That's all.
Yeah, I got you.
I do want to also acknowledge that Tina Turner was inducted.
In the same class. As a solo.
Because she's already in with Ike and Tina. And we didn't talk about this, but I just want to mention it briefly. Tina is the latest artist for it to be announced that she sold her catalog rights. Mm-hmm. But she sold her catalog rights and her naming rights and her likeness. Sold them all to BMG. And people were up in arms, like, how's she going to do that? Her family might need that. And I just want to say to everybody, the entire point of holding on to your publishing, your masters, et cetera, is that they are assets. And like any other asset, you know when it is time, when they have appreciated, and you can trade on them, sell them, use them. Tina, Miss Tina's in her 80s. She's already survived a stroke. She's not in the best of health. She ain't never set foot on U.S. soil again. She is estranged from all her kids. The one she was close to committed suicide. Yeah. And you know what? She has earned the right to do, and she's already wealthy, and she has earned the right to do what she wants to do.
She looked around and said, if I leave this, ain't nobody here to take care of it.
Well, also, I think that, and this is a trait that I try not to sort of use blanket generalities, particularly with us. But one of the things that I notice with us is that we are very emotionally tied to our businesses in ways that are not always conducive and healthy to proper business practice.
Right.
And what makes the most sense. And that is what this is, right? Like you said, this is an asset. The gold is for an asset to you know, and you know, some people have benefited from assets, right? Like, you know, maybe your grandfather bought that brownstone in Harlem or in Brooklyn, you know, in 73 when everybody was leaving. Okay, and that brownstone now is about $2 million, right? Like, it's an asset. So you can either stay there or you can sell it, right? Like this is not a very difficult thing. It's an asset.
It's an asset. And the thing and I get why some people, you know, and this is what people were telling me about Tina, and they're like, yeah, but when you see how hard people have fought because they had their things taken from them, I'm like, yes, they had their publishing or their masters or their intellectual property taken from them, and somebody else reaped the benefits when it appreciated. The point is to hold on to it until it gets to this point so that you get the profit and the net value of it. And also, like, again, Tina has earned the right to do what she wants to do and to make the decision. Like I said, because every time, I don't know why people think the family should always automatically get control of this shit.
We gotta have a family meeting.
We've seen that family fuck this shit up consistently. Yep. I was like,
because there's nobody in the family really understands the business and what the fuck is going on. And Tina, to her credit, and you know, everything she got with Roger Davies, who's been managing her since she went solo back in the 80s.
Yep.
And Roger Davies is a very smart man and really cares for Tina and didn't fuck her off like a lot of managers do. And he's really taking, I don't want to say taking care of, like, she didn't have a part in the decisions, because she did, but they're a partnership and they grew this asset together.
Yeah.
And so, also, so it's not the same story as like, oh, somebody stole it. No, she grew it. She knew what she's doing. Guys, she's a fucking businesswoman.
She's not selling this for a 2-bedroom ranch and a Mercedes with 130,000.
Correct. Miles. She got
a 98 Mercedes.
And then, yes. And you know what I'm saying? Like, let's take a chill pill here, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, like, exactly. So God bless,
like, she got, again, we're in a market right now where the frenzy of catalog, people buying up catalog as the next investment area. Mm-hmm. Catalog is going for more than, what people are getting paid out is more than 10 times. What was it? It's something like up to 20 times or 18 times or something like that. The estimated annual value of your catalog, because you get paid off your catalog.
You get the multiple.
Who knows what the music industry is going to look like in another 10 to 20 years, right? Yeah. It's changed drastically in the last 10 years. And the last 20 years has been 180 degrees, right? Mm-hmm. So the smart thing is if you have a catalog that you can, and you're at a certain point in your career, like, it's like Stevie Nicks fucking did it. Bob Dylan
did it.
Nobody is like, why did Bob Dylan sell his catalog? His kids could have used that shit. But y'all saying it about Tina? Like, come on.
And her kids, like, lady.
Like her kids is eating wings every night.
Nigga, her kids are like fucking collecting 50. Social Security.
Her family. Maybe they don't want the family to have that shit. Fuck that. Tina did it.
Give it to them babies. You know? So I want to mention that. I want to mention two Netflix films, Passing and The Harder They Fall. Let's start with Passing. So Passing, based on a book by Ruth Nader about two women who are originally from Chicago, who now live in, well, one lives in Harlem, one is visiting in town, and the one who's visiting is passing as white. The other woman passes as white when she goes downtown, like when she goes down to like the Midtown Manhattan. Her name is Irene, call her Reenie, and her friend from Chicago's name is Claire. And
Claire.
Because I thought that was interesting, because I hadn't read the novel, so when Reenie's, the movie opens up, Reenie downtown, going to like a white store and buying some toys and stuff for her son, and she's got this hat on, she's got it way down low, so people won't kind of like really look at her, and you can feel the tension of whenever she's around white people, she has the tension of, are they going to notice that I'm black? But she's in the store, when she gets her shit, she like breaks out right away. Like she's like constantly like moving. Like, I don't want nobody to really catch that I'm black, because she's not quite as light as Claire. She sees Claire and they link up again. They're both from Chicago and they're talking, and Claire comes up to Harlem. And what was interesting about this movie is, as again, I hadn't read the books, so I didn't know, but I was expecting this to kind of be an Imitation of Life-ish type of story. And it very much was not at all. It was very much to me about, it was two things. It was single white female-ish in a way, how Claire came uptown to Harlem because she really missed, she says, like, I miss being around black people.
My people, yeah.
Like, I miss my people. Like,
not to interrupt, because
the meat of the book.
But I haven't watched the movie yet. I'm so behind on watching stuff just because my shit's been in shambles. But the thing about Passing that's important as a story of Passing, and that I think that is important in the narrative that's getting lost with these kids who now think that Passing just means that you're light enough to be considered white. Look at you, and not understanding that Passing was an active, really life choice, right? Like, you had to change your whole life around it.
And cut your family off.
Cut your family off and all that. But what I think is important is that side of it, which is when you choose to pass as white, you are giving up, you are in a sense giving up your entire identity as a black person, meaning the culture. Mm-hmm. So what you see is Claire not just being around black people, but being around black people in Harlem who are living comfortably.
Living well.
And having like a great life and culture and, you know, social scene, and this is the height of Harlem as an enclave, right? Like, as mm-hmm. an enclave of community and artistry, and where black people are coming to live a rich life, and to have chosen to want to be with the hoity-toity white society people, which is kind of more cold and austere.
And matter of fact, don't forget, and then Crackers was coming uptown during this era too, to enjoy Harlem.
And chill, drink. Exactly. And
go to the parties and stuff like that.
And gamble.
Maybe
and
I should have said Crackers, but I'm sorry.
But I think that's also an important thing to highlight, is that like Passing wasn't necessarily an easy choice for people to make. They did it for different reasons. But I think to see that other side, like, okay, I chose this life. I really missed this life, but I chose this life. And I think that's the side of the story that there's a whole generation that just doesn't understand the complexity of it.
Because there was a documentary, I think I mentioned on the show, I forget the name of it, there was a documentary that I watched about a woman who had been passing, and then her
she would go to the family reunion.
Yes, she would always go back home. She'd be like, yo, I'm going back down south to be with my family and eat. Because even in this movie, remember, there was a point where, because Claire has a maid who cooks and cakes his house, and the maid is cooking, it was sweet potatoes or yams, and Claire's like, what are you making them with? And she's like, yes, like, she's like reminiscing, like, fuck, I haven't had food like this since I started passing. The other thing that was interesting about it was that Claire was such a like a firecracker. You know, she was like fly, and she was, you know, good with people. So when she did come into Irene Rini's world, she became a star. Like, her husband was kind of beaming on her, and like other niggas was trying to get at her, and even the maid, her and the maid was sitting outside one time, just kind of kicking it, like doing all the things that Irene couldn't do because of her personality. She was very like uptight and closed in, whereas Claire was very just like, hey, let's have a drink, let's pop, and you know, I'm coming up here to go to the party. So she also was watching Claire kind of take over her life. Like, right. Because Claire was the star. I mean, they wanted Claire to come to all the parties, and it was a very subtle movie the way it's done. Very subtle, not a lot of fireworks, a lot of dialogue. So I could see how some people might be like, "This is boring. I don't get it." But I thought it was really well done. You know, did you watch it, Inca?
I did. I really liked it. I did not like the Rini character. It wasn't clear to me whether or not she was sick. So if whatever illness she was having, where she would be randomly sleeping in the middle of the day, or like her hands were shaking.
I thought she was drunk.
I don't know. Whatever was happening there, I think was giving, maybe. But it was making her be a little less of herself. Like, mm-hmm. I'm never going to encourage my husband to go out and hang out with the friend if the sitter doesn't show up. Like,
especially when you see her and the husband like whispering in each other's ear and having like little glances. Yeah. It's like, oh, you just saying go on the fuck and get it over with.
And basically. Also, it was weird to me that the husband was you know, trying to get her out of the country. It's like, what do we even have here? But she was adamant on keeping the boys there in this like alternate reality. Remember the guy was talking about like moving to Brazil,
yeah,
or
Brazil, yeah,
other place. And she was just, I don't know, if I had that opportunity to get out of like the Jim Crow era of the United States, I'm going. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
She didn't want to go. And she didn't want to go. And she didn't want, but not only she didn't want to go, but remember, she also wanted to shield them a lot. Like, she didn't want, right. She didn't want him telling him, she didn't want the husband to tell the boys really what's going on. Yeah, they lynched somebody in Oklahoma. This is why. She's like, no, not now. Don't talk about it now. It was very, you know,
and like, I saw both sides. Of course, yeah. But I thought it was really well done. It was good.
Okay, so spoiler alert, bruh, do you think that Rini pushed Claire out the window, or do you think she just kind of fell?
I think she kind of fell.
Yeah,
I mean, I had honestly, I kind of checked out of that movie. Like,
my nigga was like,
the most Waldorf and Stately ass niggas I know in the world. I'm not surprised, Sean Boker.
I mean, I'm saying I watched the movie. I don't, you know, I understand.
You didn't get into it though, like that. You watched.
It was hard to get into. It wasn't. Like, I'm not making that up, right? Like, I think we can all agree that even if you like the movie, this was a difficult movie to follow and get into. This was not a very interesting, this was a very niche topic. It was a very specific kind of dialogue. It was a little slow and boring. That doesn't mean it wasn't well done and not, you know what I'm saying? So... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it was almost like a play. It was a play, really. It was really a play.
That's really what it. That's what it felt like. And do I think she pushed? No, I don't think she pushed her out the window. I think she. I honestly initially thought she kind of jumped.
Maybe she did, because they left that over to interpretation.
I thought the shame, I thought the embarrassment, I thought the prison of being in this life that she had chosen, that she knew that she couldn't quite come back to this side full time. She could never quite live on that side ever again.
Well, she can never live on that side again. Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So I think all of those things sort of played a role into it.
Possible.
And that's what I gathered.
They definitely left it open to like different interpretations. Did she get pushed? Did she jump? Did the husband push her? Like they left it open to interpretation.
I don't particularly like those endings in movies. Hmm. Okay. I just feel like it's a writer who is conflicted about how to end the story. And so the easy thing to do is to leave this sort of open-ended idea.
Y'all figure it out.
And, you know, it's you know, we're going to have a discussion and panels and, the mental state of the, you know, I guess I'm not a teen crumpets nigga, man. I'm not a teen crumpets nigga.
By the way, the movie was directed by, I forget old girl's name. But she was in The Town. Remember the movie The Town with Ben Affleck and Jeremy Renner?
Yeah.
The woman who...
The one that was a ripoff of Set It Off? Yes, I remember that movie.
Yeah, the one where the woman who worked in the bank in The Town, okay. She directed it. And I saw interviewing her, and she's actually... Her grandmother was actually Black. She found out later in life that her grandmother was Black. She's like, oh, I didn't even... But she said that it was certain things with her grandmother which she would be like, why does she act this way? And her hair's a little kinkier than she said later on she realized that her grandmother was Black. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, let's move on. The Harder They Fall. I can't remember.
I loved it.
English cat. I cannot remember his name.
Jane Samuels.
Okay. Yeah. Jay-Z, one of the producers of the film. Old time Western, but Black. With a lot of twists that we find later on in the movie. Great acting, great kind of Quentin Tarantino-ish energy with the violence and stuff like that, and the kind of dark comedy that ran through a lot of the film. I loved it too. Some subtle stuff that they put Chadwick Boseman's name on one of the train cars. And all these characters in the movie were based on real people. They didn't do this together, but each character was based on a real person. And you could kind of look online and like see what the, you know, what they were about. Other thing that was very interesting was like in real life, all these characters were like super young. Like even Idris's character in real life was like, I think he died when he was like 20. Like they were all like kids, really. Stagecoach Mary lived later. And I think Trudy lived a little longer too, but a lot of the men characters actually were really, really young and died young. But what'd y'all think about it?
I thought it was great. I enjoyed it. I love a good, it had enough action for me without it being overly gratuitous and unnecessary. I thought it was good. I thought the one thing I love about movies now is that the way that they're cast is that, they're obviously top billing level stars, and then they're people that are not top billing, but you don't really, there's no drop-off
in
there's no drop-off in quality of screen time when the Idris and the Delroy Lindo and the Regina Kings are not on screen. You don't really get a drop-off.
Absolutely.
When Jonathan Majors, look, those are really qualified, very good actors and performers. So it was really, really good, really, really entertaining. I loved it. I hate the fact that I watched it and I had to watch it in a hotel. So I'm not really getting the full theater level quality,
big TV
surround
thing,
sound, and just the, you know, so I'm definitely going to watch it again, but in like, you know, downstairs,
at the crib,
all the way up. I want shit.
Sub whoopers
rattling all the way. I want the whole shebang.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it was great, man. I really enjoyed the kid who played not Wild Bill.
The one who could shoot fast.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. He was really, really good.
Yeah.
Stealer.
What'd you think, Inga?
I thought it was great. I really loved the chemistry between Jonathan Majors and Zazie Beetz.
Yeah.
I think that that was standout for me. Like people have a lot to say about everybody that was in the movie and how they were portrayed. But I thought the casting nailed it. I thought there was chemistry on the cast. I loved Cuffy's character and just how
which one
like
was Cuffy? Oh, the woman,
androgynous one.
Yes.
Like nobody was really fucking with her. You know what I mean? She's the smallest person on the screen, but she had this like toughness that was coming through in just very subtle ways, and I liked it. I thought it was incredible.
I thought it was dope. I really enjoyed it. I have no qualms about it at all. Like, and I love the little twist at the end because I didn't see that coming. I was like,
peace to Michael Beach for being typecast as a horrible father.
Just
and
awful,
literally
just
everything
awful
that he's ever
nigga,
played.
Like
every time.
That is going to be in my man's obituary. Character actor who played awful nigga in every movie.
Every movie. Him and the
every
other nigga.
Movie.
Other nigga, Clint something. He plays awful nigga too in pretty much every. He's like dark skin. He was like the man, always like a menacing nigga, like in all the Tyler Perry movies and shit. I enjoyed it.
I do want to just say something about the elephant and all of the colorism attacks. Man. Issues, and I just want to say, like, none of them fucking looked like the real people. Like, outside
nobody
of Delroy Lindo,
Delroy Lindo had 40 years on that man, so he didn't look like him either.
Exactly.
Well, you know, 40 years well, back then,
the mustache.
You
know, back then,
27. You was
and looking like he's 73.
Yeah, niggas you was out on, hard. Out on your own at 12. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So,
good luck, nigga.
So. Yeah, like the real Rufus Buck was not a 6'2 dark skinned Englishman. Okay. Just FYI.
Exactly.
So let's just fucking take a chill pill and watch a movie. Watch it, but don't watch it.
Yeah. And you know, and use the movie to learn about these people. Like go online and learn about them. It don't matter if they have to look exactly alike, you know. And by the way, for people who don't know, the Delroy Lindo character, what's his name? Bass Reeves. That's who Lone Ranger is based on. Lone Ranger was actually a black man that they obviously made white for the movies. But the Lone Ranger character is based on Bass Reeves' real life. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it a lot. I wanted to mention. Have you read about the Zillow thing?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, so I just found out about this, you know, fairly recently. But Zillow, who's you know great company that does real estate, and everybody goes on Zillow to look at their dream home. They got the fucking $25 million joints down to like the one, you know, $150,000 joints. But I didn't realize that Zillow had started to had also basically was a realtor. They were buying property. They would go into certain markets. Buy up a bunch of houses, obviously sell them on their site and control the pricing, the level, you know, the price levels of homes in certain neighborhoods around the country. It's actually a genius thing. I didn't realize that's what they were doing, but they got caught out there because they overbought homes in certain markets, and now they're stuck with all these houses that they're just trying to unload for. You know, I wouldn't say pennies on the dollar, but much cheaper than they would have sold them anyway, because they just have too much inventory.
I think they're trying to blame it on the lack of workers to kind of rehab the houses.
Is that what they're saying?
That's what I last read.
That's what
I think. That's bullshit. Why you didn't need to buy 30 houses in 2 zip codes anyway? That's your bad.
I think that is that was kind of their official stance.
The PR stance.
Because I also think that, a couple things. One, I think that lends itself to the idea of people not working, right? If it plays into the idea of people would rather stay home than not work. It's a very easy, sellable, idea to people. The other thing is I think it might be true. I think that they might have overestimated the rapidness in which they would be able to get qualified people to come in and make these turnovers, right? Because the other thing is You know, you need to have licensed and vetted contractors. You just can't have anybody just busting
can't,
up pipe.
Can't go down to the corner and get Earl and him and Jose and them in the back of a truck.
Yeah, motherfuckers got to have insurance. They got to be a legit contracting operation. And guess who hired a lot of legit contracting operations? People who already owned homes. They were looking to put additions on their homes. They were looking to update their homes. They had a few extra dollars to make a few improvements and things like that. Maybe update a bathroom. I'm spending a little more time in the house, so I want to make it a little more comfortable. And so, yeah.
The home office now that my kids
I'm making
the
home
in.
Office. Mm-hmm. Like, all of those things, right? So I think that there are two things that are also, you know, there are a couple things that are true. But yes, I think iBuying, particularly for Zillow, was interesting because they were the keepers of the information.
That's what I'm saying. It was like they knew the, it was like insider trading.
It was because they're able to say these are the people with this kind of income that are looking in this kind of zip code that are looking for this kind of house and they're willing to pay this kind of price. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I mean, this is what happens when you're a speculator. Right. You speculate, you overshot the market. Okay. We've seen this happening and you and I have spoken a few times, Jeff, where I was just like, yo, these numbers can't, this is not sustainable.
Shit ain't adding up. Yeah.
Shit is not adding up. Like this, this person's house should not be going a penny over 550. And there's a fucking bidding war right now for, you know, a regular ass house.
Yeah, like, damn near an M. Niggas was like, you know, nine and a quarter. It's like, niggas,
crazy.
What?
The prices were insane. So there were some people who lucked out and who were already prepped to sell their homes. You know what I'm saying? Like one of my neighbors, his kid graduated. So they had already started the process of once he graduates, they were going to go up in the market and boom, that shit. Yo, it was like they put the sign out like on Wednesday and that sign was gone by like Friday.
Damn.
Like shit was moving, man. So, I mean, listen, Zillow, you know,
They'll be all right.
They'll be all right.
Yeah. They fucked up. You know? They got enough money
but the problem is that they're going to have to deal with this speculation really as a gamble that costs people their jobs because they're going to be laying people off. So their initial response was that they were going to halt buying until the end of the year, which I thought was bullshit. I thought that was them trying to save face publicly because they were basically being exposed. Mm-hmm. That very viral TikTok guy who exposed that's who was behind a lot of the single family purchases. But there are many like Zillow. Zillow was just one of many companies, corporations, LLCs, realtors that are out here buying up single family homes and doing so out of profit because they're seeing this as a very long term play.
And they're setting the market price. Like it's they're also, setting their it's own also, market price.
It's also indicative of why realty is still a local thing. Right. There's a reason that your realtor, you can have a realtor in Miami. That don't mean your realtor knows South Beach. You can have a realtor in California, but that doesn't mean your realtor is experienced in L.A. or in San Francisco or
a neighborhood in L.A.
Or a neighborhood or very
Silver Lake place. Or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like you're going to have a harder time selling this home because. ... These are all of the things that are taking place, or these are the things you might want to think about before you sell your home, right? This is coming, that's coming. So when you don't have that insight and you don't have that inside track, you're looking at blanket numbers and it becomes an algorithm and not a neighborhood. And you have to remember that these are still neighborhoods. They still need to be desired to be lived in. You still need a balance of population. You cannot have, you know, fucking neighborhoods with like high, you know, baby boomers, but no, you know, Gen X kids. You know, there has to be a balance and you have to go to places that make sure that those balances are addressed in their town. And so Zillow, they just did what niggas was doing in 2004.
Yeah.
Trying to buy and flip.
Yep, trying to buy and flip, exactly. I just thought it was very interesting because, like I said, I hadn't thought, you know, long and hard enough about, yo, Zillow and these people, like, they're setting the marketplace. They're like, they're the realtors. They're not like, you know, they're just not showing houses. They're showing houses that they own, you know. So it was just a very interesting thing. I want to mention real quick, Eric Adams, new mayor of New York City, coming in January. Gonna be interesting. Gonna be interesting because New York is getting wild. Four people got shot in Harlem last night on the corner 141st and 7th, standing in front of a bodega. And you're starting to hear more and more stories like this. It's almost like I said, like early 90s, late 80s type of stories with the drugs, with the homelessness, with the crime. You know, it's just happening more and more. So he's going to come in and really, I think, put a hammer down, being a former police officer, really put a hammer down on crime, on almost, I think, Giuliani level of putting a hammer down. It's going to be very interesting to see how he tries to take, as they say, take back control of the city. I wanted to mention Astroworld. Have to mention that, Travis Scott. So now it's 9 people dead because, sadly, a 9-year-old boy who sustained a bunch of injuries passed away, I think, yesterday or the night before. And several hundred injured, you know, stampedes. I was talking to a friend of mine. She said her daughter went, and it was just chaotic because apparently I was wondering why the VIP section was one of the sections that got all that stuff happening. But the VIP section, apparently, when they stormed the gates, that was the first section. Yeah, that was the first section that people went to. So
and they destroyed the VIP section.
Yeah, exactly. So whereas VIP would normally be a little bit of room, you know, you kind of move around, you get a drink here, and maybe a chicken wing or whatever. Like, it was flooded with all these kids that stormed. Mm-hmm. And that became a danger zone, as well as the rest of the place. They were hiring security that wasn't security. They were just kind of hiring people just because if you want a job for the day, you can do it.
And Sean will speak to this part, but it sounds like, yeah, there was a lot of kind of like whatever production company, whomever the job of security was filled it out to, they in turn, you know, filled it out like almost it seemed like damn near Craigslist ad type shit.
Yeah, just
like,
go get some people. Just go get some big guys
for the day. Which an event of this size is not something you can do that for. And I just want to mention that, ironically or not, either it just passed or it's this week is the 30th anniversary of the City College stampede. Which,
yeah, I saw that. Who
don't know about it because it really isn't talked about a lot.
Not at all. Actually,
early in Puff's days, like Puff might have just got to Uptown, but he was more party promoter than he was Puffy, the Puffy that we know now. Puff and Hev did a celebrity basketball tournament at City College here in New York in Harlem, and the turnout was like 3 times what the capacity was for the gym because they were doing tickets in advance and tickets at the door. So the event had, I think, maybe just started. It started late, so everybody was rowdy. And it's a basketball gym, but like a college basketball gym, right? So you think about like the double doors at like almost like a big high school gym type joint. And the doors open outwards from the inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they secured, they locked all the doors but one set of double doors. So when they finally opened doors, and the way City College is, I haven't been in that gym in forever, but when you first come in, there's a stairwell like immediately after you come in. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think they were directing people to the stairwell like immediately when you come in. And when they first opened doors again, after having them closed for a while, it was just like what people at Astroworld were saying. Everybody from the back was surging to the front. Yeah. There was nowhere for the people in the front to go. And the people inside could not open any additional doors because the doors
opened. The doors push out instead of in.
Exactly. And it was so contained in this stairwell, people pushing towards the stairwell, that people inside the gym had no idea. Like, the game was going on. Mm-hmm. Nobody had any idea this was happening. and it took a really long time for even people to call EMS. EMS couldn't get to the front. So yeah.
And then they finally opened the doors and they're bringing bodies into the gym. Yeah. Like people are dying in the gym.
I think that was 8 or 9 people killed, 27, 29, something like that, injured. But that had been for a very long time the only other like kind of trampling incident I'd heard about. So obviously with the 30th anniversary coming up, people, I think there's a New York Times piece or somebody did a piece about it where they're talking to some of the survivors about how Astroworld just like triggered the memory. Yeah. But the difference here is that nobody who was involved had any idea that there was a melee going on. Whereas Travis Scott is seeing like ambulance try to come through.
Yeah, ambulances are literally like, driving like, through the crowd.
And also this is how we think about parties now is not what they were back then. Like you literally might have paid a deposit of like $300 and there was really like a janitor, like literally it would be like a Mr. Earl who opened up the door and let y'all in
with the keys,
with the key ring. Right. And that was the extent of, so we're not talking, you know, the difference here is like a very small
production.
Yes. Yeah. A festival production. I'll speak to a little bit to the security standpoint. Cause I got to jump soon, but So it's not uncommon from what I'm gathering now, it's not uncommon for there to be a day of post or a week of post for people to get bodies to come in and operate as event staff. So there are different things. There is event staff. Those are usually people that you'll see in the parking lot. Right, sort of guiding shit, and you know they're
helping
aware of
what finding and shit.
Yes, helping you out, things like that. Then, as you get closer to the gates, you know, obviously that's when you get your security. And usually, what'll happen is production, you know, has they have a security director, right? Whoever is on tour, that's a person who's the security director. Usually, what that person does is they will then sort of third party a major security company in the area. So they're dealing with local people, right? You don't want to have to, you know, you're not traveling with fucking 500 security people.
Yeah, you hire people that live in the city or the town.
You hire people that live in the city. It looks to me like there were just, I want to be very careful here because in my opinion, there's a lot of blame to go around and we have been very specifically identifying things that we see as the blame when I think that there's a myriad of things here. One of the things in security, if you've ever noticed when you guys go to, so when you go to TSA, right? Like the reason that there's always a line that you have to kind of walk that line, it seems silly, but that is by design. It is to stop momentum. It is to prevent someone. If you've ever looked at an embassy overseas and you see these really big, massive roadblocks, it is to stop someone from being able to speed. If you go into Times Square, you will see these very decorative bricks that are around. Those are all security measures to prevent people from picking up steam. And literally, you can't stop that momentum. Okay, it looks like the young people that were at the door where it was breached, he seemed to panic, which is, that happens. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's very easy for people to say, this is what should have happened. Okay, 21-year-old kid making $9 an hour. And this is like his fucking first day or second day on the job. He shouldn't have been put in that position. You know what I'm saying? That's really what it is. It seemed to be a terrible logistical layout that they did not take the precautions to say, hey, you know, this needs to be here or this needs to be here. This is why particularly, you know, this is why you go to sound check and you review, you know, maps of a building, you know, this is what we need to do here. This is what we need to do there. You have this anticipation and you don't have anything for crowd control. Usually, have you ever gone to Mardi Gras?
No.
But you've seen the footage from Mardi Gras. And what you see is mounted police. Because guess what? Guess what controls
the
motherfucker?
They need a horse.
You see a motherfucking horse galloping, or you won't get out that way.
Please
believe it. So I think that I've also been concerned with general admission and what that means for these festivals, because you're literally out on the field. It's literally just a little bit of chaos. It's not sectioned off. It's not quartered off. Unlike when you go to a tour, and you guys know this, if you ever go to a show, you will see a person almost sectioned off with their section. There'll be maybe two or three guards in a section. Again, by design, because that's their post. They can identify an issue. They can call for help. They can secure that location. They can get to a person who is in need of medical assistance. Mm-hmm. There's so many different reasons why we have this thing. And this is why I was saying now with the Puffy thing is that we have 30 years of experience here now.
Yeah.
We have so much more experience here now. There's no real excuse for this to have happened. And I hate the fact that we keep talking about people that are, security directors or the entertainers who are on stage. Many people have pointed to a cameraman who,
He can't stop a show.
He also doesn't know if anybody's telling the truth. Like, he has no reason.
That's not, he's never going to do that.
Yeah.
But we are absolutely, when I say the fact that Live Nation has not caught any heat PR wise has been mind blowing and fascinating for me.
Yeah.
Because that is a publicly traded company. If there was a trampling, if there was a Disney event and motherfuckers were trampled on Disney, Disney World or whatever, like, nobody's blaming Mickey Mouse, my nigga. Like, they're calling Disney, what happened here?
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Live Nation bears some responsibility. I also do want to say, though, like, the thing that has been increasingly concerning to me about festival culture and live events, period, has been crowd control relies a lot on the crowds, right? And there is an increasing lack of event decorum and respect for your fellow concert goers, especially in the age of, like, I'm going to hold my phone up and videotape people's right in your face and people trying to just get shit for the gram. Like, there's an increased lack of, not that, and again, we just talked about a stampede that happened 30 years ago, and I've been at plenty of parties that, like, where you had to run from something, not get your purse lost in a crush of the wave or a fight broke out. So I'm not saying that younger people had any better behavior as concert or party attendees back in the day, but I don't go to festivals unless I have credentials and I can move into areas where other people can't move in, because Gen Pop is just too hectic.
Wild.
It's too wild. General admission, like, nigga, yeah, I need a seat with a number on it. That's mine.
General admission, you also get, which is, hasn't been talked about much, you get this, a lot of kids on drugs.
Yes.
A lot of kids on drugs. And obviously alcohol and everything.
Yeah, because now they want drugs.
So off the States of Mind with a Travis Scott concert as an example, where you're getting all that energy from the stage and the music and the lights and the blah, 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 blah. Like, people almost like treat it as a rave in a way. So
right.
they get high and so you get all the states of minds as well,
But they also,
I saw today that they treated people, 10 people with cardiac arrest at this.
Well, but it wasn't just because of the drugs. It's also because when you get crushed can't breathe, you don't have oxygen, all that type of stuff.
Also anxiety, right? Like, that is a very terrible, if you have never been in a crowd where you cannot make out what is happening.
And the crowd becomes like an ocean and you just move it.
It is
moving.
An overwhelming feeling.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I also want to say too, like, a lot of these guys that they're hiring, like, in fairness, it's sold to them. Like, the job that they're being sold is that this is easy money. You're going to come here, you're going to make $100-some for the night. All you really
ain't going to be no problems, really.
And it's going to be, because in their mind, right, like, Travis Scott's crowd is not one that you immediately associate with violence.
Yeah,
and by violence, we know the kind of violence we're talking about, right? We're
talking about,
you know, so it's not that, and that's what is being sold.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so it makes it easier. And you're right. Now, there is a lack of decorum. And there is a lack of what I noticed, and for our generation, is that you got tossed out of somewhere.
Right.
A lot of times a toss out was a tone setter.
Yeah.
It was to say to the crowd, we're not fucking with this. This is whatever this nigga did, it's over the line and he's fucking gone. Yeah.
And if you do it, you get tossed too.
If you do it, you next. Yeah. And we're not playing. And the toss out was not gentle.
No. Nope.
It was not, no. it was not often very nice.
It wasn't this polite. Was not,
and it was loud in public.
It was loud in public. Exactly that point. It was loud in public.
And it was you and your crew.
All y'all motherfuckers. And that's what it used to be. It used to be, yo, chill before you get us thrown out. That used to be the thing. Be like, yo, calm down because I'm not getting kicked out because of your stupid ass.
Yeah,
I've had that conversation plenty of times. You're not going to get me kicked out.
Yeah, right? I want to see the show.
And now there's entitlement. And part of this, people have said, is Travis himself, because you were talking about the altered mind state and the rave. The thing is that raves and mosh pits have social conditions too. And people seem
to absolutely have rules.
So mosh pits have rules. If somebody goes down, you clear space, you help them up, you surf them out, right? And I remember going to a very early Travis show. It was like at Webster Hall when I was at Epic, and they was doing all the mosh pit shit. And then I also noticed that he would watch from the stage. Like a fight broke out, he cut the music, he had him turn the lights on. Or somebody fell, he cut the music, he had him turn the light. Or I think maybe he kept the track going, but like had the house lights come on to get them out. But that's Webster Hall. You can't do that with 50,000 people, right?
Yeah, in an open venue like that, no.
Right, and he's already been, as people called out, like he's already been charged with inciting a riot. I do want to be careful with that language though, because like the Beastie Boys used to be charged with inciting riots. You know what I'm saying? Like that, in concert speak, that's... that term is a little ambiguous, but yeah, it's just the idea that festivals are these free-for-alls, like let's get as fucked up as we possibly can and just cause chaos was not what it was about back in like the 70s or whatever that I feel like people are trying to emulate, right? Like that wasn't what this was. There are rules and there are parameters to keep people safe if this is the lifestyle and the community Absolutely. That you want to be part of, and that's the part that's getting ignored.
And I also noticed that like the people have been putting up a lot of clips now of artists doing shows and stopping them. Like there was like, a SZA show. There was a SZA show. They just, she was like, wait, y'all all right? Tiana Taylor. Like, y'all all right? Like, it was other people like, wait. I was a Dave Grohl. It was a Foo Fighters show. He was like, yo, stop the show. And Foo Fighters, it was a massive show. And he was like, no. Stop the shit. This guy right here is trying to fight with the striped shirt. Security, get him out of here. So, like, they're showing that there can be crowd control. I don't want to say just shit all over Travis, but you do have a power on that stage to stop things if you want to, but I think he was kind of like caught up in the moment and he was raging and the shit was lit to him from outside looking out, I guess. And he could, I don't know what he was thinking, but yeah, but it's ugly. There's over 100 lawsuits against him now and there's going to be more coming.
300 some odd people were hospitalized and the correction, this is the 10th person to have died. Ezra Blount, 9 years old, but he's the 10th to die from his injuries.
Yeah. 9 years old. I don't even want to try to wrap my mind around the pain and anguish behind that between his father and everything else. And this is going to be a long, ongoing story because these lawsuits are going to keep coming. And at some point, they're going to go to trial and they're going to, you know, we're going to see what happens. Yes, I just wanted to mention that. We're going to wrap it up on that. No, next week, I definitely want to discuss. It's going to take a little time. I want to discuss Kyle Rittenhouse next week. Because by then we'll also have a decision.
Which sure
we already know what decision is.
We know what that is.
The judge is like, yo, you good.
I don't know how this judge can't be forced to recuse. We need to have a judge conversation too because
the ringtone alone.
Oh my God, how are you? Like, the fact that nobody can force a judge to recuse themselves from something like this, because clearly this man does not need to be sitting for this trial. Like, this is insane.
Did you see what happened today? So no. They had the, you know, they had to pick alternate jurors, and they let Kyle Rittenhouse, they put his hand in the little thing and picked the jurors himself. Yeah, he was picking them. It's like one of those tumbler things that you spin and pull a number out. He was pulling them out. Like, they're like, they make it as easy as possible.
Yeah. He also, you know how the judge gives like a brief instruction before they go back and deliberate to the jury? Mm-hmm. He gave like 45 minutes of the most confusing language you could possibly give on these very simple charges. Like, if you didn't walk away from that confused, like, I don't know what you've been doing this whole time. Like, it was some shit. Like, even I saw a lawyer on TikTok, like, trying to break it down. And he's like, I speak legalese as my job.
And right? I don't even
I don't know what the fuck
by what he's talking about. So
that's so disheartening.
It's so set up, you know. And I'm going to talk next week. I'm going to talk about two things. I want to talk about is Ahmaud Arbery, with your man with the black pastors. And I want to talk about Kyle Rittenhouse. But like, those are going to be, you know, topics that are going to take a little time. So.
And we got to talk about food because it's time.
Oh, well, next week is definitely going to be. We always do our little Thanksgiving thing before the holiday, where we're eating, where we're cooking, da 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 da. So we're definitely going to do that next week, too. So that's it. We're going to wrap it on this note, wrap it up on that note, rather, excuse me. Again, thank you for all the prayers and the well wishes while I was getting better from the COVID. The COVID had me down. Mighty low.
Yeah.
Mighty down one of them days.
We are so glad you are better. A little touch and go.
Thank you. I'm actually going to go to the gym today.
So oh, Lord. Take it easy.
You should also go to the doctor.
I'm going to go up to CDMV and take another COVID test. I'm not going to go crazy in the gym. I just want to try to get my strength and a little bit of my wind back. So I'm not going to go nuts. And peace to Ivy, as always. We hear you back there. She was pretty good today. I think she threw a pillow at you at one point. But besides that, that's
light work.
Light work.
Y'all can't see what's on the other side of the screen.
Yeah, it's nothing. It's easy. It's easy. So we'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Bye.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook, send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.